Politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is News for the Rest of Us. Thanks for tuning in. This week, we're very happy to welcome back Sarah Jama to the podcast. We last spoke to Jama on Rabble Radio back in March of 2024. In that episode, we discussed Jama's removal from the Ontario NDP caucus due to her calls for a ceasefire in Gaza, and how Jama's activism influences her politics. Ahead of a provincial election in Ontario, today we sit down with Jama to talk about her re-election campaign as an independent MPP for Hamilton Centre and how she believes that voters between parties have more in common than they think. Here are Sarah Jama and Rabble's Jack Layton Journalism for Change fellow, Eleanor Wand, in conversation. Take a listen.
Thank you so much for joining me on Rabble Radio.
Thank you for having me.
To begin, could you tell me a little bit about the work you do, you know, both as an activist and a member of Ontario's provincial parliament?
Sure. So before being elected, I was the executive director of an organization called the Disability Justice Network of Ontario. So its purpose was to teach young, disabled, racialized youth how to actually organize. When you grow up with a disability, you're often told to ask for help when you need it through systems and services, but you're never told to ask the question, where do you go when the services that exist don't actually work for you? So it was about teaching young people that they can actually work together and push for change, especially because, like, people don't always learn about the history of organizing around the disability community. So I'm thinking about, like, the 504 protests in the States that pushed for the right to public services and goods for disabled people. And in Canada, there's a whole erasure of the segregation that disabled people had to go through when people were forcibly institutionalized in hospitals for generations. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I got my start, and also around policing in our communities and just pushing back against police brutality. And then got elected in 2023 with the NDP, and then was kicked out of the party when calling for a ceasefire. And so now I'm running independently in Hamilton Centre during the election.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that. You're running independently this time. I mean, are there any sort of challenges that come with running as an independent candidate rather than as a candidate that's affiliated with a party?
Yeah, tons. I think that running a grassroots campaign is very different than running with a party system that kind of helps you navigate, like, insurance and all the other big questions in terms of administration. But the cool part of running independently is that you can actually inform what the campaign will look like based on what residents in Hamilton Centre are saying they need and want. So whether that's platform or, like, what neighborhoods we're canvassing, it's pretty grassroots. Like, we go out with people who are in the neighborhoods that we're canvassing. It's been a lot of fun.
I mean, why did you decide to run for re-election?
That's a really good question. I think, so when I got kicked out, there was a lot of energy and a lot of discussion around what an independent constituency association could look like off the bat. Although I was hopeful for a return to the party, I think when it became clear that that wasn't going to be possible, a community around here started to push for the creation of this association and started canvassing back in March just to talk to people about what they wanted to see in a platform or in their representative. And I think it's just about trying to figure out doing politics differently and what that could mean. I think if we can pull this off independently, it will pave the way for other folks to run independently across Ontario and otherwise successfully. So it's been interesting so far.
I mean, I want to ask you about some of the sort of issues that are top of mind for a lot of people this election. I mean, one of the issues I think that many Ontarians are really thinking about is Canada-US relations, you know, tariff threats, Donald Trump's statements that Canada should become the United States' 51st states. I mean, I want to get some of your thoughts on this. I mean, starting with perhaps Trump's comments about Canada becoming the 51st state. I mean, do you think that that's something that, you know, Canadians should be concerned about, should be taking seriously?
It has come up on the doors in Hamilton Centre. Like, I think people are really worried about it. Personally, though, what I'm hearing the most is issues with the cost of living and how that can impact cost of living here. Sorry, there's a siren in the background. I don't know if you know, but Hamilton Centre is the poorest riding in the whole province in terms of median income. So people are worried about what that will look like for their groceries and other costs. And the steel workers here too, there's been a lot of concern about what that can mean for industry. So overall, all people are concerned. I don't know if the answer to these concerns is like full-blown nationalism. I don't think that always ends well. And so I would say thinking about the fight to keep our services public, reducing costs, like a lot of the onus is on us as government and communities to not make those burdens worse. And we have, like, not all of the blame can be put on tariffs in this conversation. I think what I'm worried about and what people are worried about that I'm hearing is our disastrous health care, needing to keep that public, seniors not being able to like get the pensions that they were promised after working their whole lives. Like, we are responsible for the conditions that we create here. And like, the tariffs are terrible. And yes, pushing back is great, but I hope that that doesn't become a larger distraction from what we are responsible for.
Yeah, I mean, is that something that you're worried about? I mean, obviously, Premier Doug Ford has said he called this election, you know, in response to tariffs. Are you worried that that is sort of distracting from what you're saying? Are the issues that you're hearing more from the people in your riding?
The tariffs are a real concern. Like, I do think it is legitimate because of how terrible the cost of living crisis has become. People can't afford gas, food, or their rent, or to pay their mortgages, right? So, but sometimes it's easier to point at other people instead of looking at ourselves. And I think the Ford government is responsible and culpable for the situation that we're in, tariff or not. And so, yeah, it is a distraction. I don't think it was an excuse to call another election. I think that he's likely going to get a majority government again, and the conditions are only going to worsen.
Right. I mean, you mentioned a few things there in terms of what people are most concerned about, but what do you think are the biggest issues that are facing your riding in Hamilton Centre?
Oh, definitely the cost of living crisis that we're in, the price gouging of groceries, like people can't afford food, and rent, not being able to find places to live. We hear about the encampment crisis so much tied to this supposed overdose crisis that we're in, but really, like, people are forced to live in encampments because of the condition of not being able to pay rent, not because people aren't working. Like, people have two or three jobs and still can't pay their rent. But our government is more concerned with framing people who are on social assistance or need help as gaming a system that doesn't exist. Whether you're on OW or you work two jobs right now, it's still not enough to pay rent here in our community for a lot of people. And so I think that's front of mind for folks. And more people are becoming disenfranchised from the idea of even voting because they're not feeling like there is hope or a representative that can change this. And so I think our approach in Hamilton Centre has been to say independency might be the way to go, to make sure that policy is being created or put forward in a way that's collaborative and not just about distraction. Like, in Australia, they haven't really had failed public infrastructure investments in years because there are so many independents elected. So you have to actually convince each other on your ideas. It's not just this party versus this party. It's not one party yelling about alcohol and the other party yelling about how bad our state has gotten in terms of healthcare or housing. It's you're talking about real ideas. And so I think independency might be the way to go because of that, and because we keep getting stuck in this polarized, distraction-based politicking.
Yeah, sort of a way to remove from the sort of, I know we don't have a two-party system, but it often feels like there's only one or two options.
Right.
What are your plans to, if reelected, what are your plans to tackle some of these big issues that you've been talking about?
I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that I can change anything. I think as an independent, like, a lot of us are considered independents because we're in the second largest conservative majority or majority that we've ever seen in the province of Ontario. So what it means is whether you're a New Democrat or a Green or a Liberal, and both of which, the Green and the Liberals, are also considered independent legally because they don't have party status, right? No matter who's putting forward the idea dies. So I think we all need to be working on what collaboration actually means and looks like. I've been able to maintain great relationships with some New Democrats. I sit right beside the Greens. Like, what does it mean to do this differently and to collaborate and focus on the ideas and toss that out and set that bar? I was really proud of my approach to putting forward ideas this term. Even as a centered member, I was able to work directly with community members like Acorn. Hamilton invited me to a meeting and we actually brainstormed what they wanted to see me put forward, which was the elimination of above guideline rent increases in its entirety. And then we put that forward. So how do we work with community outside of just the party researchers to say, hey, what do you actually want to see as a solution and put that forward? Even if it gets shot down, at least you're getting community to buy into the process of like pressuring politicians to do and say the right thing. And I think that's the way forward. It's not a solution to everything, but it's a good step in making sure people actually feel represented and we're bringing forward ideas that aren't just the cookie cutter, how do we get more votes conversations.
I mean, one of the other sort of big issues, I think, something you've mentioned is healthcare. I think this is something that is a big issue for a lot of people provincially. You know, over 2 million people in Ontario don't have a family doctor. What do you think that the province needs to do to sort of address this gap in the system for so many people?
We need to be hiring more doctors and making it easier to afford medical school and opening up spaces where we can and stop targeting immigrants and others who take up maybe a few spots in med school and actually like welcome folks who want to study medicine in our communities instead of pitting us against each other. Also paying healthcare workers fairly, not just doctors, but nurses and all the frontline workers who need it. I've met multiple home care workers who are living in their cars, and I've met people who have been stuck in their homes for over 24 hours because their home care worker didn't show up. Like, the system is so broken. And what's happening is people are being warehoused into long-term care. And it's terrible. And so what we need to be doing is paying people fairly, stop taking nurses to court, making sure that we're focused on hiring people and paying them fairly and giving them fair working hours, keeping our ER services open, and like stop this investment into the private sector that's forcing some people, some good people, to flee into the private sector because there's better hours and better pay. So this is a manufactured crisis that didn't have to get this terrible if we were actually funding our system properly.
I mean, as you mentioned at the beginning, you kind of got your start in advocacy. You're an activist as well as now a politician. I mean, how does your advocacy inform your politics?
I wouldn't say I'm an activist. I don't know what I am anymore, but I would say, okay, I think I try to the best of my ability to stand up on principle, even when it's not popular. And I hope that's become clear. I think if these systems are not going to be changed by individual actors, we may as well use these positions as best we can to expose the contradictions within them as best we can, while also pushing forward good ideas as a form of harm reduction. So where it's broken, rather than pretending that it's functioning, call out the fact that it's broken and expose the theater so that we can actually change how we operate in politics and make more space for others to run and participate who will do the same. I don't think the goal of running for office is to change the whole thing. I don't think electoralism will save us. I do think it's one thing that we can engage with that can reduce harm where possible. But I don't think that participating also means that you have to sacrifice all of your principles. And I think that's where sometimes activists or organizers who are engaging with these systems can get lost, because it can turn into a game of calculus rather than, you know, how are we going to move forward together and also expose these contradictions together for the sake of bettering how we create spaces for progressive voices here.
Yeah. I mean, it's just over 2 weeks until the election. What are going to be your priorities over these next couple of weeks leading up to it?
Yeah, we've been knocking doors since March. So I think our priorities have been talking to folks as best we can across the riding. Many people don't know that there's an election still. Okay. So we've been educating people, letting them know where to vote, like listening to their ideas, just being heavily in community and being focused on that.
Yeah, I mean, just to turn back to a little bit of what we were talking about earlier, because, you know, this is something that is developing with the whole tariff situation. I mean, just this week, you know, Donald Trump has said that he will be placing 25% tariffs on aluminum and steel, and that's going to include Canada and Mexico, and that's one of Ontario's big exports. What do you think needs to be done to respond to this threat, perhaps, you know, on a local level?
I mean, on a local level, just what I'm planning to do is check in with steelworkers in my community to see what they want as a response. And I think organizing to take care of what people need in terms of labor and other places where they might feel at risk as workers. So what does that mean for them materially? Are they at risk of losing jobs? Like, what does this actually mean for workers on the ground? And coming up with a response there. I don't think nationalism is the answer, but I do think, like, getting people to understand a focus on taking care of workers here.
Yeah.
Like, workers' rights and what that means, and protecting their pensions and making sure everybody's taken care of.
I mean, we've also sort of talked about this whole affordability crisis that we're seeing, and specifically with regards to housing. You know, there are many people who are really concerned about, you know, their ability to own a home, their ability to afford rent, access to affordable housing. You know, what are your priorities to address this if you get reelected?
That's a really good question. So as a member so far, I've been able to table 20 motions, many of which were written with community. So I talked about the fight to eliminate above guideline rent increases, fight for rent control. I worked with the ODSP Action Coalition to say that we should double ODSP and OW, but also that the housing portion of ODSP and OW should be tied to the average rent in the area that you live in, and that we should eliminate marital clawbacks. I also put forward a series of motions on making sure we keep our healthcare public, rights for education workers. I met with our local Huatl union and drafted those as well. And then I put forward a series of motions on protecting injured workers and getting rid of deeming. And that just all comes from talking to folks locally and seeing what the priorities are for them. I also worked with Environment Hamilton to address air quality, to eliminate site-specific standards and just have a standard across the board. Hamilton Center has some of the worst air quality in all of the country. And so, yeah, I think the environment, making sure that we're taking care of the environment, housing, healthcare, education, and supporting injured workers in the community are some of the priorities locally that we've tried to represent provincially over the last 2 years of my term. And that's work that I definitely want to build on.
I mean, something you've been talking a lot about is sort of community engagement, really engaging and working with members of your community. Do you think that that's something that we're sort of missing with representatives currently? Do you think that, you know, politicians need to be more engaged with their communities and consulting their communities?
I think that, you know, through knocking doors, what I've come to learn is, like, these party divides are less fixed than we might think. So I knock doors of people who I would assume are, like, hardcore polyev supporters and right wingers who, like, they look at me and they're like, ah, we hate you, you want to increase our taxes. And I'm like, well, let's talk about it. Like, you're upset about this cost of living crisis and I am too. Do I think that raising taxes willy-nilly are the answer? No, I actually think that the Ford government has been egregiously fiscally irresponsible in spending millions of dollars on failed LCBO contracts or trying to dissolve the region of Peel in its entirety and then saying never mind. Like, it's not a matter of me saying let's increase taxes when I say let's govern from a place of compassion and take care of each other. No, like, putting more money in people's pockets who can't work is better for the environment and create spaces for those who can work. And so when you have those one-on-one conversations, people realize that we agree on more than we think. And I think it's okay to figure out what we disagree on, but still work together on common values. But I think where politics has been difficult to navigate for me personally is, like, you could have a differing opinion and that is just where the conversation ends. I think it's okay to openly disagree, work it out, and keep it moving. Like, I don't have to agree with everything a polyev supporter says, but that doesn't mean I don't think they have real experiences or hardships just because I don't like polyev, for example. Like, when we're talking about uniting the working class, it's about making sure that we understand that we all have different perspectives, but we can still fight together. It's not about, like, silencing each other. It's about having those difficult conversations, hearing each other out, agreeing to disagree, and then working together on where we can. So yeah, knocking doors, I've really learned that people haven't had as many of these conversations as we should, and more people would be on the right side of so many issues if we could just have those 5-minute conversations.
Do you think you have a bit of an advantage being an independent candidate when it comes to sort of knocking on doors and not immediately sort of identifying with a certain partisan label, which people might affiliate with certain parties?
I mean, that's hit or miss. Like, people still recognize that I'm the MPP who was elected with the NDP, who has said a lot about, like, Palestine and international and local issues. So it's not like I'm knocking doors blind most of the time. People kind of have an opinion. I'm just willing to, like, hear them out on it and, like, talk about it. Yeah. And I don't think we see that often enough in between elections. And I think the difference is we started knocking doors in March before we even knew there was an election coming up. So I knocked doors yesterday, for example, and someone was like, oh yeah, you already talked to me like 10 months ago. And I was like, oh, cool, because I genuinely forgot. I think this is an approach to take between elections. And I think ACORN actually does this really well.
Yeah. I mean, we're coming to the end of our time for this episode, but before I sort of let you go, do you have any final thoughts to leave our audience with today?
Yeah, whoever you support, go out and vote. I think Doug Ford is a danger to all of us, and if we are saying electoralism is a form of harm reduction, it is important to vote, no matter what you think about long-term impacts, because Doug Ford is dangerous, and by any means necessary, we need to make sure he's not elected.
Well, thank you so much for joining me this week on Rabble Radio. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Sarah Jama and Rabble's Jack Layton Journalism for Change fellow Eleanor Wand in conversation. Thank you so much for that, Eleanor and Sarah. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment. Let's dive right in. This week in national news, the United Steelworkers are calling for counter-tariffs after U.S. President Donald Trump imposed tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum this week. The 25% tariff on both steel and aluminum will likely hit workers hard on both sides of the border. More than 50% of the aluminum imported into the U.S. comes from Canada, while steel exports to the U.S. are valued at between $3 to $4 billion annually. This is just the latest escalation in a trade war between Canada and the U.S. since Trump took office. 1 week ago, Trump placed a 30-day pause on a blanket 25% tariff on all Canadian goods that he had enacted just days prior. In addition to counter-tariffs, United Steelworkers are also calling on the federal government to put in place policies that guarantee that Canadian resources like steel and aluminum are used in Canadian public projects. Staying with the Trump tariffs, Rabble columnist Kathy Crowe is warning about the economic impacts that the tariffs will have on those who are already struggling. Crowe remembers the consequences that the U.S. free trade agreements of the 1980s and 90s had on blue-collar factory workers in Ontario. Those free trade agreements led to the closure of some factories, like the historic Inglis plant in Toronto. Crowe recalls seeing workers from that plant wind up in shelters for the unhoused in Toronto after the plant's closure. Crowe cautions that Canadians need to wake up to the economic consequences of these tariffs and how they will exacerbate the housing crisis. In Ontario news, Ontario Premier Doug Ford may have used the tariffs as an excuse to call the current election. But in an opinion piece on Rabble, Paul Kinnert is reminding everyone that tariffs are not the only issue in this campaign. Previous Conservative governments in Ontario chose to privatize the province's public power system, and voters are still feeling the economic consequences. While the privatization netted significant profits for wealthy Conservative backers, taxpayers continue to bear the costs. Kinnert points out that according to the Ontario's Financial Accountability Office, Doug Ford has spent an average of $7 million a year in taxpayer dollars to subsidize the now private power system in order to keep costs low. At that cost, the province could have easily repurchased the utility and made it a public asset once again. Kinnert is calling on opposition parties like the NDP to commit to creating a publicly owned green power company to ensure that power in Ontario is clean and affordable. In Manitoba news, in an article exclusive to Rabble, freelance reporter Caleb Dueck points out that that the Provincial Accessibility for Manitoba Act is sadly not doing enough to support Manitobans with disabilities. The Act is designed to ensure that places of business and public spaces are accessible to those living with disabilities. But the Act is based on a complaint system, leaving enforcement up to those whom the Act is meant to serve. In an interview with Rabble.ca, David Cron, executive director of the Cerebral Palsy Association of Manitoba, said, quote, "It shouldn't be up to the person with a disability to be the accessibility police. It shouldn't be a complaint-based system where I have to complain every time I go through every aspect of my life to get the changes that I want." End quote. And finally, join us for Off the Hill next week, where we discuss the Liberal leadership race. Our expert panelists will dissect the strengths, policies, and strategies of each candidate, diving into the key political dynamics at play. With an election on the horizon, we'll explore what's at stake for the future of the Liberal Party and its leadership. Featuring community organizer and political commentator Jennifer Arp, writer and policy researcher Chuka Ajekam, political advocacy and communications professional Sabrina Grover, and Rabble's own parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg, co-hosted by Robin Brown and Libby Davies. Don't miss Off the Hill, Liberal Leadership Race on Wednesday, February 19th, 2025 at 4:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. As always, you can read the full version of all the stories we talked about today on Rabble.ca. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, and share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca. And thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Nick Seabrook, and I'll talk to you next week.
Is this station to you? Local radio by and for your community, news and information that matters to you. You won't find anything like it anywhere else. Now we need you. We need your voice to support the Community Radio Initiative. You see, radio has been there for you in those important moments, and now we need your voice. You can join the fight for the future of community radio at mycri.ca, because local voices are what shapes our community.
Radio Rewind.